is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I'm joined by my colleague and friend, Thaddeus McCotter of American Greatness, and we're joined by Malcolm Honlein to report on the disorder in the Middle East these last days, missile exchanges. But we begin with Thaddeus's question about what day is important to Israel. Thaddeus?
Yes, Malcolm, there was recently a commemoration of Israel's founding. What can you tell us about the celebrations and about the Palestinian pushback to it?
Well, as you know, there is both the Hebrew calendar and an English calendar, the secular calendar that we use generally. So the founding of Israel, according to the Hebrew calendar, was celebrated last week, the 75th anniversary, with massive celebrations that followed Israel's Memorial Day. Today is the secular date, May 15th of 1948, when the UN voted the partition and went into effect at midnight. Prime Minister, the man who became the first Prime Minister, Ben-Gurion, made a very famous speech. And 11 minutes after midnight, President Truman was the first to recognize Israel. And the British mandate ended at exactly 12 o'clock, which gave the U.S. the opportunity to be the first to recognize. And now the Palestinians have started to call this Nakba Day, Day of Disaster, because they're not ready to accept Israel's right to exist or recognize Israel's existence. And so they engage in activities not only in the Middle East, but around the world now and on campuses in the United States, including which are very hostile, often invoking violence or disruptive activities. And the epitome is that at the United Nations, they're talking about having the first Nakba Day commemoration of some kind. And Abbas, the prime minister, would participate. The United States has come out very strongly against it, not because they don't recognize the rights and concerns about Palestinians, but because this is a counterproductive move. Obviously, Israel objects very strongly to it. It would be like having a celebration of Independence Day here in the United States with a British theme, saying that this was all a mistake and demanding a return and condemning the outcome of 1776. So this is a great concern because it becomes a propaganda vehicle, very hostile and usually with violence in the Middle East. And we will see what happens this year. But to give it international recognition would truly be disgraceful, especially for a country that was mandated and sanctioned by the United States, by the United Nations on this day in 1948.
Malcolm, why is the Iranian government praising the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which just conducted murder attempts with missiles for a week?
So the Palestinian Islamic Jihad is part of the axis of resistance that Iran has created that starts with the Houthis in Yemen, continues to Gaza with both Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Although we believe that Islamic Jihad is the apple of Iran's eye because they're much more violent, not prone to negotiations. And of course, the axis includes Hezbollah and Hamas in Lebanon, and then their militias in Syria and, of course, in Iraq. So that is supposed to encircle Israel, and they were counting on Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which engaged in this cross-border attack with rockets last week, taking heavy tolls amongst their own people because many of the rockets fell short. But the Iranians offered them $5 million a day not to stop, not to agree to a ceasefire, which Egypt and Qatar were brokering together with the help of Saudi Arabia and others. Obviously, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which lost a lot of its key leadership, was pressing, wanted to have it, and the Iranians were pressing them against a ceasefire, which ultimately was reached and now is in effect. But the head of Palestinian Islamic Jihad praised Raisi and Khamenei, but also Hamas and Hezbollah, which in effect stayed out of the whole conflict and did not launch missiles as they had expected, neither from Gaza nor from Lebanon. And this is an interesting reflection because they did not want to be subject to the retribution from Israel, the loss of the massive investments that they have made in the infrastructure. There are 150,000 missiles in Lebanon. There are tens of thousands in Gaza in the hands of Hamas. So this was limited to Islamic Jihad's activities. But the Iranians have invested so much money there. And you even see, I mean, the tragedy of the suffering of their own people in all of this, that to the point where they are selling their body parts, and it's the most in the world, in fact, of any country, that they are engaging in this desperate action because of the terrible economic conditions. Yet Iran continues to squander its money and engage in the support of all these terrorist entities.
There were a couple of Iranian warships that called it Brazil. And then where did they go, Malcolm? Because the suspicion was they might be headed towards Venezuela.
So that's a very interesting question, and one that I was actually wrestling with and consulted with our mutual friend Joseph Humeyer, and we were speculating until this morning early when I found out that they were calling at a port at Salalah in the city of Oman, a journey that started in the fall of 2022, the first time ever that they were able to circumnavigate much of the world. This was two ships, the Dina destroyer and the Macron, which is a forward-based ship, both part of an Iranian flotilla. And they traveled more than 51,000 kilometers in a single mission. They went to St. Petersburg last year and included, then they began the sailing, which took them. And if you remember, we spoke about them calling in Brazil, in the port city of Rio de Janeiro. And then the Dina joined the warship, and the two of them essentially established a three ocean commands to oversee naval missions the Iranian Navy has in the Indian Pacific and Atlantic Oceans. And they are actualizing it by this. And the United States failed to stop the warships from passing through the Panama Canal, which U.S. Officials have acknowledged. And the Iranians, of course, mock them and the United States' inability. And they're saying that this was another slap in the face of the great Satan, the actual words that they use. And so since the bonding, since departing from Bandar Abbas in September of 2022, they've had this long voyage, although they are under sanction by the OFAC, by the United States, and in conjunction with a broader attempt to sanction the drone sector, et cetera, in their capacity. So we have now solved the mystery of what happened to those two ships, that after Brazil, they seemed to be lost, but in fact, they made their way back home.
Okay, let's go for one more quick mystery. Iran summoned the Iraqi ambassador in Tehran, and the Iranians were not happy. Why not? Can you say quickly?
Very quickly, they were summoned there because in retaliation for the inviting the separatist groups to come to a formal conference in Iraq's Kurdistan region. And they call these, of course, terrorists. The Iranians label them as terrorist activities. They have a joint security cooperation bilateral pact that they signed just in March. And they're feeling that this is a violation of their agreement to defend each other's borders. They're claiming that these are tied to America, to the Zionist regime, to all sorts of other things. The Kurdish groups came back into the spotlight when the protests broke out across Iran. This is part of their fear about the separatists, meaning the ethnic groups breaking away and organizing against them.
That is?
Yes, Malcolm. There are reports of a new U.S. embassy being built in Lebanon, around the suburbs, I believe, of Beirut. What can you tell us?
Yeah, I'm wondering what you would do as a member of Congress in your old days if you had gotten this proposal that they're building a 43-acre complex in Okar, which is a suburb of Beirut, at 2.5 times the size of the White House. And it's 21 soccer fields, to give you an analogy. And few American tourists go. It has a population of 6 million people. It's the third highest travel advisory level, so many people aren't going. And yet they're building a place with swimming pools, with all sorts of facilities, and it's reported to be costing $1 billion. And they first announced the plans about 5-6 years ago. And this is quite terrible when you're in a country that is in economic ruins without food and medicine and electricity, all sorts of shortages. As somebody joked, they can eat concrete. This is going to be a finger in the eye of a lot of people. when they see this huge project arising in the middle, in a very visible place in Beirut.
Malcolm, Beirut has no government. Who are they going to talk to?
Yes, they can't fill the presidency already for a long time. The government is essentially Hezbollah. And there are a lot of Lebanese Americans, and I'm sure that they have interest there. And there are some who live in Lebanon. Lebanon is an important country. I met with some Lebanese people last week, and we've had a long relationship with them. But the question is, even they were joking about the swimming pool surrounded by greenery and the views of the Lebanese capital, hoping that they would get invitations to use it.
All right, let's go to the exchange of missiles the last week. I'm guessing this is in some fashion connected to the April 9th meeting between the leader of Hezbollah and the leader of Hamas in Beirut, or is it not connected? Because the missiles were fired by the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, but you've already made it clear that they're a cutout for Iran. So what did that meeting set up?
So I think that the only relevance of that meeting might be that they agreed to stay out of whatever the Palestinian Islamic Jihad does. They have to be delighted, both of them, that the leadership, that the top leadership of Palestinian Islamic Jihad in targeted attacks were eliminated, and really remarkable where a single apartment in a building was hit. And the level of intelligence really is going to set them back on their feet, seeing that Israel, the ability with these special technologies that Israel has developed and the use of David Sling for the first time, in a successful way. So it is the anti-missile defense system that
I want to understand this, Malcolm. Hamas and Hezbollah celebrate or welcome the destruction of the leadership of Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Is that correct?
Certainly Hamas does in Gaza because they're a challenge to them. And I think that the fact that none of them joined in this, and there were communications saying, we're staying out, don't bring us into this. They both hide missile launchers underground in Gaza in residential buildings. They operate them remotely from far away. They have similar methodologies, but Hamas has far greater firepower than Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And Hamas choosing to stay out, knowing that they would, that their military capacities would be set back immensely were they to join, seeing the capacity of Israel to address in such pinpoint and exact fashion all of the military capacity of Islamic Jihad. The Gaza division has a fire canopy system that demonstrated impressive capabilities to target Islamic Jihad launchers and mortar teams, which Israel did not have in the past. And when we get the full accounting of how much was really taken out, and in the course of this week, in terms of their military capacity, 17 command centers, dozens of terrorists, military storage sites, anti-tank squads were all taken out. And I think that the message for everybody else is going to be very clear.
Thaddeus, quickly.
Malcolm, there was an attack off the coast of Tunisia. What can you tell us about it?
There's a holiday called Lag BaOmer. I won't go into it, but there's an island off the coast of Tunisia called Djerba where Jews have lived for perhaps 2,000 years. There's a remnant community of 1,100 there and a couple hundred in Tunis. They came under a terrorist attack. Unfortunately, two people were killed, one Israeli, one French. They are cousins, but hundreds of people were there, including the U.S. ambassador and others, had just visited before the attack took place. This is an annual commemoration. It's a little known thing about this community that goes back to the time of the destruction of the temples. And the government has been very wary in terms of its comments, they condemned the attack, but not mentioning that it was Jewish or the targets. And this is an annual pilgrimage site that was protected. There were security guards, and one of them eliminated the terrorist who was a naval officer.
Malcolm Hohenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, my colleague of American Greatness, Thaddeus McCotter, the Dusty One is coming. I'm John Malcolm.